It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you're at here in the United States. Good to have you on the show. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. Man, it's one of those days where I kind of woke up in a zombie-like state. I went to bed super early. I typically try to go to bed. I know this is going to sound crazy to some of you guys. I try to go to bed around 9 because I like to be in the gym by about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And last night I went to bed a little bit before 9. And right as I was dozing off, you know, my kids made some noise. I don't know. Kind of woke me up from that, you know, that little dozy sleep thing. And then I was up for the next couple hours. Kind of ruined my my workout this morning. Anyway, why did I say that? No reason. Just wanted to whine a little bit, I guess. And the microphone here gives you an ability to do that. But we'll work out this afternoon because I know that my physical fitness is important to you guys. Just kidding. But it is important in general. It's important to have good vitality, good energy. Physical fitness does that for us. So whether you're doing yoga or maybe you're doing calisthenics, P90X, I do that at home quite often. There's several different ways to keep in shape. Healthy body, healthy mind, healthy business. What I'm all about. My first guest is Mary King. And speaking of healthy, Mary King helps you stay healthy with the IRS. Mary King, known as the IRS problem solving attorney and co-author of the book Protect and Defend. Her career in law primarily focuses in IRS problem solving as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary King, welcome back to Money for Lunch. And she is, let me try that again because Mary King, ¿dónde está Mary King? So, my producer saying that she is, I guess, running a little bit behind schedule. And all right, let's see. Mary, almost there? If not, we're going to talk about this. Because while we're waiting for Mary, we might as well get things going. So here's the deal, guys. Some of us filed our taxes on time. Congratulations. Some of us did not file our taxes on time. Hopefully you did the extension so you have until October to pay. However, just because Mary and I have talked about this various times, it does not preclude you from paying whatever you owe the IRS. So start making your payments now or pay it off if you can. The thing about it is, and I have learned this from spending time with Mary King, is that first of all, the IRS will work with you. Second of all, they don't like being ignored. So if you owe the IRS money, the best thing to do is to, you know, get somebody like Mary King or somebody else that you trust and start making things happen. Start communicating with with the good folks there at the IRS and make things happen so you're not in a position where, you know, crap happens. And let me tell you, here's a great example. There is a, now that I'm just going to bring it up, his name fell off. Wesley Snipes, thank you. Wesley Snipes. I think he's gone to jail once, possibly twice, for tax-related issues. And it's stuff that can be avoided, okay? Call it bad advice, call it whatever, but, you know, come on. You know, let's avoid the dramatics, and let's just deal with it head-on. Cheryl Latre's already here? All right, so let's take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to bring on our first guest while we get this party started. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Broderick. Broderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. And we're going to be chatting with Cheryl Latre. I met Cheryl a couple of weeks ago. Actually, she was on the show a few months back, and then we ended up meeting in Las Vegas. It was a lot of fun. Cheryl Latre Cheryl Latre's broad experience in real estate and business is an asset to both the investor and the seller. She has over 24 years of experience as an associate broker, residential commercial investor, real estate developer. Her education includes a BS in finance from RIT and a double associates in business administration and liberal arts. As an entrepreneur, Cheryl both founded and ran two companies. Her skills in assisting investors and helping other companies achieve their goals through wise real estate investing, selling, and business plan writing gives Cheryl a competitive edge in today's fast-moving marketplace. Cheryl Latre, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hello. Thank you.
Good to have you back. All right. So let's talk about this because – you do help, investors and so on. So I wanted to ask this, the top 10 mistakes that you see real estate investors make, and I wanted to talk about these top 10. We probably won't get to all of them, but I think at the end we're going to give everybody a chance to download them for free. Let's start with misjudging how long a flip will take. Let's talk about that.
Great. That is the number one mistake that new investors make. They, think, hey, I can bust out this rehab pretty quickly, get it on the market, sell, and they don't actually allow for contingencies when something goes wrong or permits that are needed that are delayed or, just supplies, what have you. And then once it hits the market, they're over-anticipating a sale. And so often people are budgeting 3 to 4 months. It's 6 to 8 months would be more realistic, and that delay chews up profit quite a bit, between $1,000 and $1,500 a month at least.
Now, okay, so let me ask you this. In a scenario like this, would it be wise to put a renter in there for those 6 to 8 months, or that could also hurt selling the property in the open market? Now you could only sell it maybe to another investor who wants renters. Is that right?
I would never encourage somebody putting a renter in while you're doing a rehab for a whole handful of reasons. Many times these properties are distressed, so you're going to be having somebody in maybe even potentially an unsafe situation. There's also kind of rules for getting somebody out. Sometimes
gotcha.
I've actually seen – I had an investor one time who put his contractor in there. So the contractor stayed during the rehab. The contractor failed to leave when it was done, and there actually had to be court action to get the contractor out, of all things. So I would never encourage anybody to rent out while a rehab is going on.
Right. No, and that makes total sense, because not only is it unsafe, but you could just see it's going to be a terrible situation for the person renting, even if they were a contractor, somebody who's used to that kind of situation. You could see the example you gave, it could get really sticky. And what's interesting, too, here, I want to point this out, that this misjudging how long it, X will take. I mean, in this case, we're talking about how long a flip will take, but that applies directly to any business. I think the number one thing that we all do in business is misjudge how long it will take and how much it will cost, right? Everybody does it. I mean, people who have been in business for years, professionals misjudge how long and how much.
Absolutely. In the real estate, that cost is actually – that holding time is what is usually forgotten. Oh, wait a minute. If I'm going to hold this, I've got all of these other overhead expenses that usually add up quite a bit. So when you're misjudging that time, it's the holding expense for that time that eats away profit, both business actually and real estate.
Sure, sure. All right, so number two – over improving the property. Talk about that. What do you mean by over improving a property?
This is often a common mistake when I have a contractor who's starting to get into the world of flipping, and they're used to doing really quality, high-end work, and now that it's theirs, they even go that extra mile to put some even more refined touches on. But what happens is they overdo the property. Potentially, they misjudge the price point that the house should be at, so if they over-improve, do a high-end improvement upgrade on something that is more of a medium grade flip, now that extra money they put in and extra time, they don't recover that. So most contractors actually on their first flip will do this. They over improve the property and not get back all what extra time and resources they had put in.
Yes. You know what, and I could see that happening. I mean, you want to put together a good you want to put something out there that you're proud of, and before you know it, you've outpriced the market. So I could just see that happening, to anybody who's not experienced.
One of the successful things I've seen an investor do is grade his flips. So this is an A, this is going to be a higher end, we're going to go for the best upgrades. We've got a B, which is going to be maybe a move-up home, and some of the improvements you might need in a more family-oriented neighborhood, I guess you'd say. And then you have C, which is going to be the quick flips, first-time home buyer, just get in there, so get it done so that you can get that first-time home buyer in. So he would grade his flips. Is this an A, B, or C? His team would then know, these are the upgrades we do, these are the standard supplies, et cetera. And if it's a B, there's a list, a protocol, this is what we'll do in a B, and then again in a C. And so it was a very successful way. He created a master manual, labeled them A, B, C, and his team very efficiently knew how to handle the property.
Yes, and I want to point that out, is obviously you're looking at somebody who had experience and had a system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you grade it, this is an A, this is a C, as you pointed out, and because they had a system, okay, if it's an A, we're going to do these things. This is the standard upgrade for an A. Here's the standard upgrade for a B, standard upgrade for a C. And that's fantastic. And that, comes with experience, is that, hey, you've done enough of these that what to do. And it's a system to contain costs as well as time.
Absolutely. And it got so refined that it said, this is the paint color, these are the faucets, it was extremely broken down, so there was no question as to what would be used on it.
I love that. I love that. I think it's a great idea. Systems is what built the pyramids, and they've been tested over time. Systems work You know, I just want to point that out to everybody. All right, let's talk about this. Investment territory is too large to start out. What does that mean?
So, for example, I'm in Greater Rochester, New York, and there are lots of suburbs, and people will say, well, you know, I'm interested in any, if something comes up in any of the Rochester or the suburbs, let me know. Where instead, if they would focus on one, for when starting out,
right,
focus on one small area, get to know it really, really well. That's where you'll get to see the opportunities show up a little bit different, and where you'll know some of the market intricacies. For example, I talk about that sometimes you have a street, and at one end, prices sell a little bit differently than at the other end. You know, sometimes this side of the tracks, that side of the tracks. And by staying in a small area, focused on knowing that really, really well, you begin to find, like I said, the best opportunities and price it effectively. The other thing that in knowing that market well is some of the best deals aren't always the foreclosure list, because at that point it's gone through quite a bit of time. The seller was distressed, it then went to the auction, and now the bank has it. And if you're focused on a very small area, sometimes you can see a property distressed at that beginning stage where that seller's just starting to get into trouble, and you can potentially pick up a deal before anybody else even knows about it. So that's another advantage of just knowing an opportunity really, really well. Sometimes you'll become such so known in an area that when somebody's thinking about selling, they call you first. Another one of my investors had four or five on the street, and before anybody would go to list, they actually called them and said, hey, I'm thinking of selling. Would this be something you're interested in? So, again, knowing a small area first when you're first starting out.
I love that. I love that. And you know, one of the things that a lot of people get into, they do this not only in real estate, but I think, again, it's one of those things that I think applies to all businesses, where there's this sense of scarcity or loss that if I narrow my focus too much, I'm going to miss out on all this other stuff. And sometimes that's not true. First of all, as you said, you become known for this, you become known in that area. And second of all, you're not chasing all these shiny objects and being distracted by the fact that you're focused.
Absolutely.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say once you've learned an area, once you've learned some of the different strategies on how to invest, then you can go to a larger territory.
Sure. All right. And that leads me into my next mistake that a lot of investors make, especially starting out, is too many strategies. Talk about this too many strategies mistake.
So one of the several investment strategies, flipping, we hear a lot about, you know, buying and flipping a house. You can have holding, which is a property that you're going to rent out. You can buy a hold property at full retail, and there's in many cases nothing wrong with that. You can also buy and hold, but buy it discounted, buy it as a foreclosure, restore it, and keep it as a hold property. And then you have what we call assigning properties or wholesaling properties. And when somebody starts out and they want to do all of these strategies all at the same time, they get too distracted. They don't evaluate usually correctly each of the opportunities. And instead, if they wanted to, again, become an expert in flipping, run their numbers, get their systems, or if they're going to be a property manager, they want to buy retail, have these property have the properties managed professionally, they, again, have a different decision model. And then if you're wholesaling, that's completely different as well. So I encourage investors to start with the end in mind. What is it at the end you want your portfolio to look like? And then you build strategy around that. And the reason for doing that is one property is going to look different to people with two different strategies. So by knowing what you want in the end and just focusing on the path to get there instead of trying to do all of it at the same time, like I said, one of the mistakes I see investors make.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And again, I think that applies to not only real estate. A lot of these strategies apply to us in just about any business where you're trying to do so many things because, you know, you've heard all the stuff. We're especially in today's information age, we're sometimes overwhelmed with all these great ideas and great strategies, and you know, and yet we're not able to really execute on any of them. Cheryl Latre, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back. On these 10 strategies, where can we download them for free?
MistakesRealEstateInvestorsMake.com.
MistakesRealEstateInvestorsMake.com. Man, it doesn't get much simpler than that. I'm going to go there right now. Mistakes? What is it? Mistakes?
Mistakes
Real Estate,
Real Estate Investors Make.
InvestorsMake.com. And right there, you can, Mistakes, Real Estate Investors Make.com. You can download this list. You can get to know about Cheryl and her team. Cheryl Latrey, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much. Great spending time, and have a wonderful day.
All righty. Good stuff there from Cheryl Latrey. She helps, as you can tell, she helps people like you and I and investors to get, to make money with real estate. And if you want to download these 10 strategies and compare to what you know, you can go to MistakesRealEstateInvestorsMake.com and grab them for yourself. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Brad Williams, president of Brad Williams Financial Services. Brad has over 25 years of addressing the financial concerns of retirees and business owners. At his adding his strong communication skills, and Brad, after first listening to his clients' needs and concern, is able to simplify and explain in everyday language even the most complex concepts and alternatives. He treasures the trust his clients place in him and safeguards it by his words and actions. His reputation for unquestionable integrity is far more important to him than any fee or commission. For these reasons and more, Brad often forms a close personal relationship with his clients. Brad Williams, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, it's great to be here.
Well, okay, you know what? And I'm excited to have you here because I'm going to kind of put you to the test here, you know, because it's to me, and I want your feedback on this, it seems like the financial industry has become, purposefully complex, hasn't it? I mean, there's all these different fees and stuff and all these different designations. You're never really sure what's going on.
There's a lot of truth to that. You know, a lot of consumers just don't know where to go and don't know where to turn. And so with the designations and alphabet soup that you can potentially have after your name, you know, some are good and some are kind of fly by night, but you know, education's good in the long run regardless.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about closing a joint account. In some cases, may not be the best thing for your credit. Talk about that. What do you mean?
Well, when you're going through a divorce situation and you've got long-standing accounts and they're in joint names, a lot of times, if possible, if you can take one of the names off of it, is better because creditors are looking for long history of payments. So if you've done a good job paying that account, even though you're joint on it, you know, it would be in your best interest to take one of you off, whoever's decided to walk away from that account. And that's just one of the things that you've got to deal with when you're dealing with credit during a divorce, because that can be there's a lot of pitfalls there that can catch you and cause you a lot of problems if you really don't look at it in a systemized manner.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because this whole thought of leaving one person on, leaving one person off, it's a strategy that a lot of us don't even think about.
That's true. A lot of people just say, hey, look, this is a joint account. We just need to close it. And that's not always in your best interest, especially if maybe one of the spouses was the low-income earner and didn't have a lot of credit in their name, you know, that type of thing. It's always good. I always recommend my clients that they each have some credit in their own name, because even outside of divorce, you know, an untimely death or something like that, a disability that may cause problem for the high-income earner, that other earner needs credit for themselves as well to take care of them during that interim, during that phase they're going through till they get their life stabilized. And, of course, the divorce would be number one on that list.
Sure, sure. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about know the difference between an account holder and authorized user of a credit card.
Right. For example, I have, when my daughter was in college, I had an American Express card that I gave her a card to use instead of having to call me every time she needed anything. And she would be the authorized user. Well, I'm the account holder, and it's my responsibility to make the payments. It's reflected on my credit report. So when my daughter used that card, it didn't do anything for her credit because it wasn't on her in her name. And so that's the difference. You know, there's an authorized user and the account holder. All the responsibilities fall on the account holder. So if you're in a married situation and the credit card's in your name, but your spouse is just an authorized user, well, you know, that's one that you need to change, because if you're going through a divorce, then, you know, that can be a real issue.
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to point this out. I mean, you mentioned this, but I want to emphasize this. If your daughter would have, I don't know, charged something on that credit card, you know, obviously, she charged on something on there that maybe she wasn't supposed to, some outrageous amount of spending on that card, the burden falls on the account holder, meaning you, and not your daughter. So she doesn't get any of the benefits of the credit, and she doesn't have any of the responsibility or liability of paying it off. It all falls on the account holder, right?
That's exactly right. Now, in her case, I put a limit on it, so it kind of insulated me from unreasonable purchases. But, yeah, she had a certain amount every month, so I'm not suggesting spouses do that to each other, but that is one thing to do. And you've really got to go through those accounts to make sure that you've set it up right. For example, you might have a joint account and the agreement might be, well, I'll pay this one and you pay that one. And it may be that it's an account you can't take somebody's name off. Well, you can't get around that. But what you need to do is you need to set up joint access to that account so that I can, you know, for example, if I'm the one getting the divorced and my wife is going to handle that account, but my name's still on it, I need to be able to go online and check and make sure those payments are being made, because it's going to reflect on me. And there's all you know, unfortunately, a lot of divorces get kind of nasty, and you really need to monitor that, because some ex-spouses can be somewhat spiteful. So
Right. It's
really up to you to manage your own credit, and that's one way to do it.
Yeah, it's you would never think what's the word I'm looking for? A pissed off human being would be so spiteful.
but there's
some history of that, right?
That's right. And there are, you know, I had one client that his wife decided she was going to divorce him and started running up all the credit cards, and he didn't know about it. And then all of a sudden she dropped it on him, and they were all in his name. She was an authorized user. And so he was responsible for them. And so he didn't monitor them. So it's very good that, you know, even in a happy marriage, that you monitor your credit, look at the usage, things like that. But, you know, if there's problems arising, then, you know, couples really need to sit down and start. If you've decided that it's over and you're moving on, then you need to sit down and start coming up with an exit plan, just like if you were in business. You know, what are we going to do with this account? What are we going to do with that account? You know, over 50% of, from what I understand from the Better Business Bureau, of identity theft happens from people close to you, you know, relatives, close friends. And so it could be that spouse is opening up credit because she knows, and, you know, being a man, you know, she may know that she's going to leave. Boom, she starts opening up credit and using it. So it's really good to have some credit monitoring system, whether it's LifeLock or whatever you want to choose, that protects, that gives you indication of when things are happening on your credit, especially going through a divorce. You need to set that up. You really need, in this day and age, you really need that all the time because
sure.
of all the identity theft going on, but especially in a divorce because it can get really messy. And
well,
so,
you know what? And today, the other thing that, you know, like, for instance, American Express does this. As far as I know, all the major credit cards do this. All the banks do this. Well, they will send a little notification to your phone or your email
right.
when your account spends a certain amount or hits a certain level or whatever. So it's not hard nowadays to monitor your credit. Or you're spending.
You're exactly right, and that is a great idea. American Express does that with me. Every time I hit a certain level in my account, they notify me. And a lot of another pitfall that people have is they assume the divorce decree covers everything. Well, it doesn't when it comes to creditors, because all the creditor cares about is that your name's on the account and you're obligated to pay for it. They don't care what's in the divorce decree. So even though the court may decide, well, you're going to pay off these accounts and you're going to pay off these accounts, it really comes down to the account holder. And I appreciate you asking me the difference between the account holder and the authorized user. It really boils down to the responsibility of the account holder whether those bills are paid on time. And like I said, the creditor really doesn't care what's in the divorce decree. They only care who signed the original document that was responsible.
Right. So let's elaborate a little bit. So if you have this divorce decree, you're still, no matter what that divorce decree says, if you're the account holder, you have responsibility, ultimate responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and going through a divorce, not just credit, but you need to be looking at your accounts and beneficiary forms and things like that, because a lot of people think just like a will covers their accounts, when retirement accounts, it really doesn't. Doesn't matter what's in the will. What matters is on the beneficiary designation.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to monitor those things to make sure that they're set up properly. And
you know what?
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ask. Go ahead.
I was going to insert this. This whole beneficiary is a very, very important thing to really be mindful of. There is not too long ago here in the Scottsdale area, we had a couple who got married. They had gotten married later in life. I think they were both in their 50s. And for years, the wife had the sister as the beneficiary of her, I think of her either 401, I think it was her 401. And so they had gotten married. 10 years after they got married, she passed away, but she had never updated that beneficiary form. And so the
right.
sister ended up getting this money, refused to share it with the spouse,
right.
and there's nothing, there was not a whole lot he could do about it.
No, in fact, there's a Supreme Court case. There was a 401k issue where an individual worked for DuPont had gotten a divorce, and in the divorce decree gave his soon-to-be ex-wife other assets in lieu of his 401k. And it was pretty sizable 401k, but he never changed the beneficiary because he thought the divorce decree covered all that.
Mm.
Well, lo and behold, a few years later, he dies. And the kids go, who were supposed to get the account, go to claim on it, and they're told by the administrator, well, no, you're not the beneficiary, she is. Well, now, she could have disclaimed it, and it would have defaulted to the estate. But then again, that's probably why she's the ex-spouse, isn't it?
Right.
There's issues there. But she didn't, and it went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And this is really – your listeners really need to focus in on that. And the Supreme Court said that on a retirement account that the beneficiary form trumps all other legal documents, period.
Wow.
And that's where it stands. So, you know, one of the things I do with my clients on a regular basis is regular beneficiary reviews, even of accounts that I'm not holding, or life insurance policies. I've had clients come in for their first meeting, and, you know, one of the things I ask them to bring is life insurance policies. And there's a lot of second marriages now, and one of these clients came in, and I'm reviewing the beneficiary, and it's still the ex-wife. And fortunately, we called, got that fixed right then and there. But I'm still glad that I didn't have to ride home in the car that day with them, because that could have been a real issue if he hadn't fixed that.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's amazing. We don't realize all the, you know, over a lifetime, how many forms and things that we've done that we have to undo or update. And
right.
it's just an incredible amount, and it's easy for the stuff to fall through the cracks. So good for you checking on your clients for that. Let's talk about this. What other steps can you take to reduce problems that may come up with these pesky joint debts?
Well, you know, take one person off. I mean, you know, have a systemized way of paying it. Like I mentioned before, if one of you is going to pay it, you need to make sure that the other one's monitoring it on a regular basis so that they can hop in and make the payment if the payment's not being made. Short of that, there's really not much else you can do, because you either close the account or you keep it open, take somebody off, or joint pay it. And, you know, each one of them has their own issues, but when you close the account, you're losing, especially if it's a long-standing account, you're losing that credit history, which is so important these days. You know, taking one person off is the best answer if they'll allow you to do that. And then, of course, joint paying it was the worst option.
Right.
Because you're opening yourself up for, you know, I mean, what if your ex-spouse gets in financial problems? Well, that account's not going to get paid, and it's going to come back to you.
Right. Well, and I like what you said there. Bottom line is you have to monitor it until it's paid off. I think that's a smart move. Get somebody off of there. And I think those are two really smart ways to settle that joint debt. Let's talk about this, because, again, this is something a lot of people don't think about, but it does affect people of divorce quite regularly, and that is, what steps do you need to take to protect your identity in a divorce?
Well, first thing is once you need to do it regular anyway, but once you decide you're getting divorced, you need to pull your credit report.
Mm.
And then you need to add some kind of credit monitoring so that your soon-to-be ex-spouse doesn't start opening accounts jointly. And so that's very important, and you need to monitor that credit report on a regular basis during that whole process. And that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, come up with – the next would be make sure you have a list of all the accounts. And everything that you all have taken out together will show on your credit report. And you need to pull – you both need to sit down with your credit reports and compare them. I know sometimes that may be a little testy because you're going through a divorce, but if you want to do it right and you want to do it without the least – with the least amount of hassles – you really got to sit down and try to work it out. And it's, you know, it can be tough, but it's really important, because that's going to carry forward with you for the rest of your life, is that, or at least for the next 10 years, is those credit issues that you've got when you get divorced. So, you know, have a monitoring service, pull it, go through it, determine who's going to do what on which, and then come up with a plan for each one. And then going back to the beneficiary forms, you need to come up. You need to pull every bank account, every retirement account, IRA, brokerage account, whatever. Check the payable on death, if that's the case, or the beneficiary forms. You need to get a printed copy from the institution, which I suggest my clients do anyway. And any time they make a change, when they get that confirmation letter that says the change has been made, they need to put that with that account paperwork. So it's all about a paper trail. And so, you know, if you have a list of things that you've got to handle together as you're departing each other, be systematic about it and just say, okay, this is what we're going to do on this one, and check it off. And then have a credit monitoring service check it and make sure it stays that way until everything's done and that divorce decree is issued.
Sure, sure. And again, thanks to technology, all this monitoring doesn't take an enormous amount of time. I mean, again, you can have monitoring. All the credit bureaus allow an automatic monitoring service. It's either free or costs, you know, like, I don't know, some ridiculous amount of money, so, you know, whatever, $5 or $10 a year or something. There are so many apps and services out there that will help you monitor your finances that there's no excuse for not doing it.
And I have I use American Express and for personal and business a lot. And they have a great credit monitoring service. So I pay for that. I'm not sure it's $15 a month or something like that. But I'm allowed to get credit reports on a regular basis from all three credit bureaus. And it tells me anytime there's a change in my credit number, which is good. And it tells me any unusual activity on the accounts. So, you know, some people say, well, I don't want to spend that kind of money. Well, you know, if you're having to go back and fix something that's broken after the fact, you're going to spend a lot more than that. And so to me,
absolutely,
it's just peace of mind.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's peace of mind. It's a type of insurance because, you know, if you wait and all of a sudden, especially in, you know, from a legal standpoint of view, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I used to pretend to be one. And so if you go and let's say that a transaction has occurred, but you don't discover it for, you know, 90 or 120 days later, chances of you disputing that are like zero.
Right.
And so
exactly
now
right.
you're dealing with something and it can just get ugly. So I agree with you. You know, you spend a few bucks, you get your stuff monitored, you're getting updated credit reports here and there. It's so much simpler, so much easier than having to deal with one, unauthorized charge or something that you weren't expected that your former spouse did or something. It's so much simpler and emotionally, it's so much easier to deal with a monitoring service than to deal with a bunch of crap that you could have avoided.
Right. That's exactly right.
Even your Social Security,
you need to get online, set yourself up an online account so you can monitor your Social Security and, you know, your lifetime earnings, that type of thing. You're right that it's so simple to do it now. It just takes a little effort to get it started. And then once you do that, you develop a system of when you're going to check it. And, you know, I heard on your earlier interview you said something about system. I'm a systems fan. You know, it makes it easy. I mean, when you look at when a pilot flies a plane, he goes through the checklist every single time. Now, he knows that stuff is working, but he checks it anyway. And, I mean, we ought to look at our life like a pilot flying a plane. You know, because he knows he goes up in that thing. He wants to come down in a controlled manner.
Yeah.
And so he wants to make sure everything's working before he takes off.
Absolutely, absolutely. Brad, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back. Brad Williamson, Financial Services. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
All righty. Good stuff there from Brad Williams. Simple strategies to make your situation better. You know what? I know that we talked quite a bit about divorce, but even if you're not getting divorced, all of these strategies apply to you and your credit and your finances, don't they? I mean, think about it. Right now, whether you're just starting on your marriage or you're like me about to celebrate my 30th year of marriage, having these monitoring devices, services on your credit report, on your Social Security, and on your finances is a no-brainer. Get it done. Do it. Remember, and this is the most important part, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.